Hello, everybody. Welcome in to the Lakers Collective. We're talking NBA draft today. What should the Lakers do in the draft? Who should they target? Should they trade the pick? We're going to get into all of that. I'm Trevor Lane. He's Jovan Buha. Team USA playing in about 50 minutes. I am pumped up, fired up for that. Got my USA jersey. I am ready to go. Jovan, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, man. Let's go. Let's go, Team USA, and then let's go NBA offseason transaction cycle. Let's start it. Let's have some action here over the next few days leading into the draft, and then the next week going into free agency.
Are you the type that gets like frustrated with the just mountain of rumors? Do you get to a point where you just want to see something happen, or do you just enjoy all the different possibilities? And then when something happens, it happens.
I guess more the latter. The former can be frustrating at times with certain things that pop up that you just either know aren't true or possible. Because I'll see the fake rosters or the certain, you know, I think we should trade this for this player, and not even Lakers related, just in general on NBA Twitter. And you're like, that's never going to happen, right? Or I hope this player slips to us in the draft or something like that. So there's always this is the time for wish casting. This is the time for hopes and dreams in the offseason. But I think we're going to have a pretty explosive transaction cycle here starting around the draft leading into free agency. First and foremost, we got to figure out what's happening with Giannis. But then after that, there are a ton of potentially big dominoes to follow that. So I'm really excited.
And the Lakers can certainly be right in the thick of things with all of that. But of course, first, we do have the NBA draft coming up next week, June 23rd and 24th. We have the draft. I guess let's start here. What do the Lakers need out of this NBA draft? The obvious low-hanging fruit is they need a player that they need to hit on an NBA player. Their last two first-round picks have not turned out to be that. So that of course, is the low bar that has to be cleared here. But with the 25th pick, what is it specifically that the Lakers need to find?
I was going to take it somewhere else, but I'm going to hold myself back with that. I mean, they can't bust. They can't be a bust here. This cannot be JHS or Dalton Connect. This has to be a player that at a minimum ends up being a rotation level player. Like I think that would be the bare minimum here in terms of what you're looking for at number 25. Now there's two ways to go about that. You can draft the more win now ready player, or you can draft the project prospect that you maybe there's some risk in that, but I'd almost rather them take a risk on a player. Like one player we might touch on is Chris Senick Jr. And there's a version of Chris Senick Jr. where he hits and he's awesome and he's one of the steals of the draft. There's a version of Chris Senick Jr. where he never develops and he's more of a bust. I would almost rather take a swing. Like that one to me is a little bit more understandable though, because with JHS and DK, like DK was supposed to be now, like ready now. He was an older rookie. He's a couple years older than Max Christie. Like he was supposed to be plug and play and be a rotation level guy. And we saw those flashes the first couple months of the season, but he quickly fizzled out and is clearly not an NBA rotation player right now. JHS was somewhere in between, kind of a win now guy and a prospect, but he didn't really show those signs though. And we didn't really see the flashes with him, and just quickly within like the first year, it was like, all right, this guy's just not it. So I think you know, there are some guys in between, but in general, I would say if you're going to take some of the aggressive swings, I would hope it's on a more athletic project type. And then if you don't do that, then I think you go the more like win now kind of senior junior level guy. But I think they need a hit on this pick if they keep it, and it needs to be someone who within the next couple of years can be a rotation guy.
I do think that in the context of the NBA in general, the draft has become overpowered when we think about how valuable it is to have a player on a rookie scale contract that is a rotation piece. It is just an incredibly valuable thing in today's apron environment. That said, I think in the context of the Lakers, they need to be very open to trading this draft. As much as I am falling in love with a number of these different players that could be there at 25, I really think that they need to look seriously at trading this pick. It's got to be for the right return. If you can get a player you think is going to be in the top 8 in your rotation, and we can make the contracts work and all of that. Because when we think about the context of you missed on your last two first round picks, you didn't get a rotation player, it is so important that this 25th pick, whether it's via trade or actually using the pick, turns into a rotation player. And I think the safest way to do that is to use it to trade for somebody who already is an NBA rotation player. Now, that said, if you're telling me you can't get a player of that caliber, if you're getting a player who would be your ninth guy in the rotation, your 10th guy, maybe not even in your rotation, then no. Then you bank on the upside that comes with the pick, make the selection and say, you know what? We missed on the last two. That just means we're due. Maybe we'll get it right this time. But do you agree with that about trading the pick? Do you think they should be as aggressive as I think they should be in terms of moving on from the 25th pick and trying to turn it into somebody who can play right now?
So coming into this, because we obviously did the pre-show prep of what we're going to talk about today, I think my standard was a little bit higher than that in terms of I would probably only want to trade it for someone who is a starting level player.
Okay.
And is ideally an upgrade over DeAndre Ayton or Marcus Smart. Because when we talk about what the Lakers need, right? Like we're saying at a bare minimum here, a rotation level guy, top eight, top nine, whether that's the draft pick or someone that they're trading it for. But if we get more specifically into the archetypes, I still think they need help at center, and I'm not expecting to find a starting level center in this draft, especially at number 25. But can you have someone who complements Jackson Hayes a bit, you know, contrasts him maybe a little bit, and can be part of a three-headed center committee? Or can you find the elusive two-way wing, a guy who can be a shooter of a certain caliber and also be an athletic defender on the other side of the ball? So those would be my two general archetypes I'm looking for the Lakers, mm-hmm. is some sort of big man or center, and then some sort of two-way wing. But you laying it out that way, I understand the counterpoint. I know you've been on this on Lakers Nation, and I think my standard would be, and this is the standard I'm trying to attack all of my roster analysis from this point on, is like, could they be a rotation guy against OKC, San Antonio, and New York? I think those are clearly the three best teams in the NBA on their own level right now. And so when I think about watching that conference final series between OKC and San Antonio, or that final series between San Antonio and New York, could you plop that player into that series? So for example, like a guy like Luke Kennard, I think is below that line. I don't think Luke Kennard is a guy you could plop into either one of those series. And so like that to me is like, when we're talking top seven, top eight, I think it's probably a starting level player on last year's Lakers team. Maybe that player can be a high level bench guy on like the future version of the Lakers. But I do think it's got to be kind of in that Marcus DA range, even if you're like recalibrating the roster to have that type of player be a bench guy, if that makes sense.
No, I'm glad you drilled down on that a bit more in terms of stylistically, what type of player would it need to be as well? Because you could take a player that you could say, well, this guy should be, or is the quality that would be either a starter or a top rotation guy or something, but isn't really within the sphere of what the Lakers need, isn't really the fit that you're looking for. If you were to go add somebody who's a great on-ball scorer, let's say, I don't know, I've got Zach LaVine top of mind, like, but does that really move the needle for the Lakers a ton? Not saying they actually could trade for him. I'm just thinking of a pure like score first type of guy that you could go get. Salary wise, it's prohibitive and all of that. Just that archetype doesn't necessarily make sense to go target a guy who is a primary scorer, but doesn't provide a lot of the other stuff. You'd be looking for that big, for that wing. It's some of the guys that come to mind. Like if you could turn that pick effectively, like you jump in as a third or fourth team or whatever in a Giannis trade, if you could turn that pick into Kelal Ware, that's a guy that I'd be taking that kind of a gamble on, even with the unknown of, you know, his motor and how he's going to develop defensively and all those sorts of things. That's kind of the type of piece that I'd be looking for if I'm going to trade that pick.
I like that. Yeah, I think like, and he's kind of one of those guys where you see the upside. So like maybe right now, if he was thrown into one of those two series, he wouldn't have, or you know, would have been a fringe rotation guy, but he could easily be a starting level guy on one of those teams by next season or like the following season. So I think there's always some nuance here. There's always some gray area when we have these conversations. Like I think he is the exception where if it isn't a guy that's clearly a top seven or eight guy right now, they have to have the upside and physical tools to develop into being that player within the next year or two. But yeah, I mean, that would be like, he's among the exceptions, but otherwise it needs to be, can you play, can you hang on the court with those three teams? And if you can't, if you're below that line, then I would rather just keep the pick and hope that someone slips to you. Or you could always also make the pick and trade it in the future if something materializes closer to free agency. So you have a lot of flexibility with that. But regardless, like the one archetype, we'll say it now. Let's get it out. I mean, there's two archetypes, actually, I'll say. The two archetypes the Lakers do not need, and I think would be a colossal mistake to make with that 25 pick, are they do not need another point guard, and they do not need another scoring undersized combo guard. Yeah. So if you are under 6 foot six, you need to have a certain amount of athleticism, length, and defensive chops. If you are 6'5 and below, and you're a questionable defender, and your thing is scoring and shooting, or you're a point guard, I'm out. So like all the guys I'm looking at are 6'7 and above. There's one guy that's under 6'7, but he's got incredibly long arms, incredible athleticism, and he's an exception here. So that's my thing for the Lakers too, is like there needs to be a certain height, length, athleticism, defense from all the guys they're looking at. If they don't check those boxes, I'm not interested.
Agreed. Yeah, agreed 100%. Okay, so that would be the parameters of a trade. You're trying to find somebody who fits. Somebody who fits, obviously, everything we do has got to be through the lens of how does this player fit with Luka, but it's also would have to be somebody that could really slot into the roles that the Lakers need, and that would be if you're going to be open to trading that draft pick. Otherwise, if you're going to make the pick, I do think the Lakers are actually situated fairly well at the 25th pick of the draft because there is kind of a drop off there. You know, Sam Vecenie, who does a phenomenal job covering the draft, and oh my God, his draft guide is always just absolutely incredible, the amount of work that he puts into that. But he had some comments the other day about there being a not a surprise to hear about the teams at the back end of the first round scrambling to try to get up higher because there is a cliff, talent-wise, right after where the Lakers are picking. So they could find themselves in a position where somebody slides, somebody falls, and they're in a really good spot there at 25. And there's a lot of guys that I'm really, really interested in. I guess let's start, though, with a guy that I'm really interested in on the wing. And he's not athletically exactly what I tend to think of in terms of for the Lakers. But my God, he just pops out off the screen with the speed of his decision making, his processing speed. It is absolutely insane. I'm talking about Joshua Jefferson. Where are you at on him as a potential target for the Lakers? Because when I think about JJ Redick saying I want guys who can dribble, pass, and shoot, and I think about the reasons why Luke Kennard really popped for the Lakers, I see some things that I think could really work on this Lakers team with him.
One quick addendum to the conversation we just had, because I feel like we need to touch on this. So put a pin on Joshua Jefferson for a second. Sure. Would you be willing to attach the pick to get off of Vando's contract or to do some sort of, like, I guess that's the one thing we didn't cover is just,
we
talked about what you would want for the pick, but if that's the cost of getting off of Vando's contract and that opens up the possibility of more cap flexibility, whether you're operating above the cap or under the cap, how would you feel about that?
So in terms of Vando, if I'm going to move off of Jared Vanderbilt's contract, I just need to know why. What is it that you're going to do? If I'm going to sacrifice that first round pick in order to do that, is there something lined up that you're going to be able to use that cap space for? If you're telling me that moving off of Jared Vanderbilt's contract is going to be the difference between being able to afford landing somebody, maybe it's a Walker Kessler and a sign and trade. Maybe it's you go add somebody in free agency. I would assume who probably winds up back with the Wolves. I know he's a favorite target for Lakers fans, but anybody else that's out there as well. Maybe they know they're losing Rui Hachimura, so they target John Collins, and that's the difference between being able to get John Collins and bring LeBron back and add some other pieces or whatever it is. That's what needs to be clear. You don't sacrifice first round pick just to move off of Vando unless you have a reason to do so. And I think the preference for me would be, can you give up that first and Vando, and can you get a second round pick? Can you get another selection, especially if your intel is telling you somebody that you really like? I don't know, maybe it's a Terrace Reed or someone like that is going to be there at the spot that you're going to drop back to in the second round. I think that would be my preferred path. If you're going to attach that first to Vando to move off of his salary, that may be wishful thinking there on my part. But the bottom line, if you're going to sacrifice a very rare thing for the Lakers, that's a draft pick. They don't have a lot of them. There needs to be an immediate return for that. You need to know what it is you're getting with that extra flexibility.
I see a couple of comments here in the chat. One person says Vando's better than Jake from State Farm. The issue is he's making twice as much as Jake. So even if I don't agree that Vando's better than Jake, but even if you do think that, I don't think he's worth twice as much as Jake. And then Mr. TD331 here says, I think Vando can be better, though, if we can't move him. I have some hope still. My one thing with this is I will continue to beat this drum. Like, I just don't think Vando is a JJ player. As long as JJ is the head coach of this team, we've now seen it for two seasons now. He views Vando as a fringe rotation guy. And the Lakers are not in a position where you can be paying a fringe rotation guy $12 million. That's too much money for a fringe rotation guy. Like, if you're making $12 million, you should be in the top eight, if not top seven on your team, ideally. So, you know, there's exceptions. If you're OKC and you have a bajillion guys on rookie scale contracts, okay, you could pay Kenrich Williams, you could pay Isaiah Joe, you could pay Aaron Wiggins. But with the exception of you having a loaded roster with all this rookie scale underpaid contracts, if you have a guy making $12 million, that needs to be a rotation guy. And as long as JJ Redick is the head coach of this team and has the basketball sensibilities that he has, Vando's not going to be more than a fringe rotation player at best, and likely behind Jake LaRavia in the pecking order. So I just don't think it makes a lot of sense. Like, to me, that is one of my things on the Lakers priority list, is moving off of him. Now let's go back to Joshua Jefferson. So I have a list here of nine guys. He ranks sixth on this list. However, there's a chance that all five of the guys that I have ahead of him are gone by pick 25. So he, to me, is where we start to get into, this is a guy that I'm almost certain will be available at 25 in there for the Lakers. And if the other five guys I had ahead of him are gone, I would love Joshua Jefferson. I think if you look at this year's roster, and we're talking about Jake LaRavia and Jared Vanderbilt, I think you could plug Joshua Jefferson into the Jake LaRavia role, and he could do an even better job than Jake LaRavia in that role and bring more offensive. Like, to me, the people compared to Kyle Anderson, I see that. I actually see a lot of Spurs era Boris Diaw in his game, and just that the herky jerky, you know, leveraging his size and strength, but he's also an incredible, I mean, he's the best passing big man easily in the draft, and one of the best passers, period, in the draft. And just that, being able to operate out of the elbows and short role playmaking. And I could just see him tomorrow being a guy you plug in as like the ninth man on the roster, and he plays 12 to 15 minutes and fits seamlessly. The shot, the athleticism, there's certainly some things that are concerning, but to me, he's about as plug and play as it gets, especially in that 25 range.
Now, my big question with him is, the ball is going to be in Luka's hands a lot. You know, there's a lot of footage of him out there, you know, getting the dribble handoff, and then he's reading the floor and surveying, and he's able to hit guys that are cutting and all of that. How much of that really fits into a Luka offense, or even Austin Reeves? He's going to be at best a secondary guy when it comes to being kind of that playmaker type role that you could see him in. So, and like we said, we've talked all about the Lakers' need for hyper athletic players, super switchy defensive guys that can just fly up and down the floor and shoot the hell out of the ball. And, you know, Luka was asking recently for more shooters on the team, so it's more difficult to double team him. So I don't think he checks every box, but he is a guy that just, like, you just watch him play and you just think, that's a dude that just flat out knows how to play. And it tends to be those types of players. They find minutes, and I feel pretty comfortable in thinking that he is going to be a long-term NBA player that you can see slotting in right away. But you're absolutely right. There are guys that I would definitely take ahead of him should those guys fall. Who's your favorite, like, best case scenario, not going crazy like AJ DeBonta falls or something, right? I mean, but real world could actually happen, feet on the ground here, but maybe it takes things being pushed in the Lakers' favor a little bit for this guy to wind up at 25. Who's that guy for you?
So I just had Mike Garcia on. Shout out to Mike. And he convinced me of Morris Johnson Jr. and Cameron Carr and looking into those guys. I don't think they're going to be available at number 25. Those are guys that you're going to have to trade up for. But I think both guys, or each guy, checks a different type of box. Carr is the one guy here that I mentioned earlier, under 6 foot six, but he has the largest discrepancy between height to wingspan in the draft. And he's an uber athlete who can, he could catch lobs in half court settings. And like you also have the shooting, the just the defensive length. And so I think he's someone that I'd be really interested in. Mora Johnson Jr. is a little bit on the small side for a full-time center, but he can defend 1 through 5, one of the most switchable big men, if not the most, you know, arguably in the draft. And also an awesome lob threat in dunker and finisher. So those would be like my dream guys, I think, that you would probably have to trade up for. I'd be pretty surprised if either one, like they might go in the lottery or you know, mid first round. I think guys that actually could be in the Lakers range. First one that comes to mind is Jaden Quaintance. This guy is he's a Robert Williams III clone. Even to like having some of the health stuff and you know, tearing his ACL, but you watch him out there and his defensive motor, versatility, just all that. Like he's awesome. He's incredible. The big thing is the health. But I see people talk about he's very limited offensively. That's fine. If you're playing with Luka Doncic, Austin Reeves, LeBron James, if you could catch and dunk, you're going to look good offensively. So he's a high level rebounder. He's got some passing chops. He started to even try to expand his shot to the 3-point range. He's not there yet, but like there's so many similarities between him and Robert Williams. Like it really feels like he's almost a carbon copy of him, even again, down to the health concerns. But if you could get him on a $3 million contract versus Robert Williams on a $13 million contract, I'd rather just take the upside swing. He's not even 19 years old yet. Then the final one is Dalen Swain, who to me is, you know, just his ability to, you know, one of the best ISO score. I think he was in like the 95th percentile of ISO scoring. So his ability to get downhill, get to the rim, his array of finishes, the defensive length, versatility, the ability to play passing lanes. A couple things with him are obviously the shot and just the physicality. But I think any of those four guys to me, with a couple of those guys, you probably have to trade up for a couple of those guys. You might have there at 25, though it's maybe a little ambitious. I think those are some of the names. What about you?
Yeah, we're in lockstep. I have Mora's and Card not being available. I have them, like you say, you probably have to trade up to get them. But number one and number two on my list of guys who realistically could actually, if things break the Lakers' way, wind up there. It is Quaintance and it is Swain. It's those two guys in that order. Quaintance, you watch him play, and I just think, man, for a Lakers team that likes to switch everything, that likes to throw out different defenses, like you can run whatever defense you want. And he can do it, right? If he's healthy, and that's the big gamble. It's if he's healthy. But for all the reasons that I love Robert Williams as a target for the Lakers, it's the same thing with Quaintance. He's a guy who could step on the floor and just immediately make that defensive impact. He's going to be all over the place. He is so good at the shot blocking, the rebounding, the ability to be a switchy defensive player, everything that he does, the high motor. That's a guy where if he stays healthy, you could see him at some point in his career, probably, you know, not immediately, but at some point you could see that guy making an all-defense team. That's the kind of upside that he would have. And then Dalen Swain is the guy that I think of. If anybody was going to make the leap from this range in the draft, if it's not Quaintance, if anybody was going to make the leap to become like an all-star level player, I could see the path for Dalen Swain just with he has so much wiggle, his ability to get low, his hips, the flexibility that he's got there on his drives. He has so much creativity in the paint when he does get there. He's got the ability to get 2 feet in the paint, drive, kick. That's a very important skill set in today's NBA. You make him a secondary creator in your offense. I think he can do those things. Certainly have question marks about the shot, and that's going to be the key for him. Can he get the shot to that next level? And I know that's going to have a little bit of PTSD there with Lakers fans, right? We remember JHS, it was, he could be a good defender. If he can just get the shot going, he could be a good player. So the reality, though, is everybody that we're talking about at this range is going to have a but that is with him there. Nobody's going to be perfect. And I like a lot of what Dalen Swain brings to the game, both sides of the ball. And I just think it's tough to find wings like him, period. And to have the opportunity to draft somebody like that, it is a bit of a gamble with a shot, but he does some stuff that you typically don't see guys doing at this spot in the draft.
I think we're on the same page, because with Quaintance, like, there's a lot of, and look, I'm not going to pretend to be a draft Nick here. I am coming into this late to the party. I've read as many mock drafts as I can. I've read as many draft profiles as I can. And I've watched about 15 to 20 minutes of film on all these guys that we're discussing. So same, I think I have like a baseline level of knowledge, but I'm not Sam Vecenie. But I would say from what I have read and seen with Quaintance, a lot of people say, like, if this dude was healthy, if he did not have the ACL tear, if he if there were not these concerns with his medicals, he'd easily be a top 10 pick in this draft. So I understand, like, there is real risk there if you end up keeping the pick and he ends up slipping to you. And you have to think that even with some of the injury concern, if he is slipping to 25, that probably means that there's more concern maybe than initially anticipated, because most people are projecting him in the top 20. I see a lot of like 15 to 20 ish range. So if he's there at 25, typically when a guy slips, there's a reason for it. And there's some concern there with the medicals or whatever. So if he is there, there's obviously some risk, but I'm also like, of all the guys we're going to discuss realistically that could potentially be there at 25, he might have the highest upside, like by far. And you could be getting a guy that when all is said and done, you know, is a top 10 level guy in this draft that you're getting at the number 25 pick. And then Swain, obviously the swing thing is just his shooting and that, you know, for Laker fans, I mean, there's several guys on the roster where the swing thing is their shooting, sure, particularly as like the, you know, Jake LaRavia, Jared Vanderbilt. But I do like guys who can, like, he can, I feel like, almost fill the, you know, he's not the same, I would say, like, level athlete as Derrick Jones Jr., but being that, like, cutter slasher type around Luka and Austin, I think having wings who can, like, the Lakers don't have wings, really, who can just attack a closeout and get to the rim and sort of knife their way there and, like, you know, finish with an array of finishes. That's something that stood out with him, where I'm like, him operating as a weak side guy, like, yeah, teams will potentially test his shot and try to force him to be a shooter. But if he can get a more aggressive defender coming at him, closing out, or you can, you know, position where he's at on the floor, he can attack. And if he gets ahead of steam, I think that's a pretty difficult guy to stop. So I think both those guys are higher upside plays that might not be rotation guys from day one, but I could see being rotation guys within the next year or two. And if I'm going to gamble on a guy, I'd rather gamble on either one of those archetypes.
Agreed, 100%. All right, I want to get to a couple of bigs next. I want to talk about Henry Vassar. I want to talk about Terrace Reed. Before we get there, let's give a quick shout out to our sponsor, and that is Prize Picks. They do a fantastic job. You guys can use the link in the description down below. Super easy to go hop on Prize Picks and play anytime you want. The code is HMA. Play $5, get $50 instantly. We've got Team USA coming up in just a bit here, so I'm leaning into that. I'm going Balogun, more than 1.5 shots in this one. Christian Pulisic is going to be out, unfortunately. And then I also have Patrick Beach, the keeper for Australia. I've got more than 1.5 saves in the first half. I do think USA is going to come out guns blazing, putting shots on goal, and that's going to force some saves. So if you guys want to get on in on it, use the link in the description down below. That code is HMA. Play $5, get $50 instantly over with Prize Picks, and we appreciate them sponsoring the show. All right, let's start with Vassar. I haven't looked at the mocks in the last couple of days, but last I did, most often the guy I was seeing mocked to the Lakers was Henry Vassar. How do you feel about, I'm very torn on him. Where are you at on him potentially as a stretch big, maybe a lob target? I'm worried a little bit about the overall physicality of the game and his ability to deal with that kind of stuff. But where are you at on him? Certainly a talented big man to consider.
You laid out my thoughts perfectly here.
Sorry, I shouldn't have said all that.
No. I understand, and I've made this point before on here, like the stretch five position right now it's the in vogue skill set, where you look at, I think, the three best teams in the league right now, they all have stretch components, with OKC having Chet and Jalen Williams, San Antonio having Wemby, and New York having Karl Anthony Towns. And I think you go, the last decade of champions all had at a minimum a four that was a high level shooter, but oftentimes a five that, you know, Jokic and AD had their two best 3-point shooting stretches of their careers when they won championships. Al Horford and Porzingis in Boston, Golden State going small with Draymond. like you could just, you know, Marc Gasol, like Serge Ibaka. You could go through the recent list of NBA champions, and they all have actually had stretch bigs for the most part. So that is a really important skill set. I think the concern here with Vassar for me is that it's really just the defensive side and the physicality. Like, none of those guys were as thin and scrawny as he is. Porzingis maybe is the closest, but Porzingis is also 7'3", 7'4", and is just this unicorn. I mean, there's a reason why he was called the unicorn. With he was the pre-Wemby guy there. So he's not that level of rim protector or defensive force. And then you just get into everybody else had a level of athleticism, defensively, mobility, and just rim protection and physicality that I just don't think he has. So offensively, I think people focus on the stretch part of it, which is a big element of his game. But I think he's an underrated lob catcher. I think he's an underrated pick and roll role man. I think he's got dexterity around the basket. He's got skill in the post. He's a solid passer. So offensively, it's about as close to a fit as you would want from a role playing center. Like, he's clearly not going to be a star. I don't even know if he's going to be a starting level player, but I think he can be a rotation guy. I think he can be a solid backup. And through that lens, like, he checks about all the boxes you would realistically want from a modern center in, you know, in 2026. Offensively, the issue is defensively, I think he's more of like a B to B minus rebounder. And I think he's more of like a C plus to B minus rim protector. And that just complicates his fit. So to me, at least in the short term, he is a guy that could be a rotation guy in a, if you are taking the committee approach and you have the three guys and he does contrast Jackson Hayes a bit, that could work. But I would rather take, like, to me, he's probably the weakest defensively of the group we're looking at here. And that's where I'm like, I just think the Lakers really need defense. And if you have questions about a guy's ability to defend at the five, like even Luke Kornet, who on paper was one of the best rim protectors in the regular season, we saw like Luke Kornet was food in the playoffs. And I just think like the level that you have to get to as a big man defensively to stay on the floor in the playoffs is like, is just, it's stark. And so Vassar and another guy I think we'll touch on in Terrace Reed, I just ultimately have questions about, like, can those guys hang at the playoff level defensively? And right now I'm leaning more towards no. And that's where I have some concerns with those two.
Yeah. I'll tell you what scares the hell out of me with Vassar. It's I don't know that I totally buy the shooting, not yet anyway. And that is what the thing is, because everybody is buying into this guy as he's this great shooter. And yeah, he shot 43% from three last season. But guess what? That's a 10% increase from deep over what he shot the season before. And that's a lot, right? And in terms of attempts, we're talking about on 94 three-point attempts, right? We're not talking about, we saw 500 three-point attempts from him, and we know what he is a great shooter, right? We had those questions about Rui Hachimura after he jumped up to be a 40% three-point shooter. It was, okay, is this what he is now? Has he actually improved, or was this an outlier year and he's going to fall back down? Well, now Rui's done it for 3 years, and we know, okay, Rui's just an amazing shooter. That's what he is. But oftentimes you hear people cite free throw percentage as the greater indication of shooting talent. He was a 62% free throw shooter. So was this just a hot three-point shooting season? And I'm not saying he's a bad three-point shooter, but there's a big difference when you look at his skill set between a guy who is a 42%, one of the best bigs shooting the ball that you can go get, versus he comes back down to earth and reality is more, he's like a league average 37%, 38%, something like that, slightly above league average three-point shooter. There's a big difference between those two things. Now, I do think he'll be a willing three-point shooter. It's not like he's a non-shooter or defenses would ignore him out there, but I've got questions. I would want to see more before I just completely dive into this notion that this guy is this phenomenal shooter for the big man position. Maybe that's what he ultimately is, but that free throw percentage is giving me a little bit of reason to hesitate there with him. So I'm not totally sold. Terrace Reed is a guy who's, as you said, has some drawbacks defensively. I kind of dig the old school vibe that you get from him, just the power game that he plays, the physicality he brings to the game in the paint. but I do worry about overall the athleticism upside and how he defends at that next level. Like, I think he's gobbling up rebounds during the regular season, but I share your concerns about what he ultimately looks like in the postseason.
He has got some De'Ron Sharpe to his game, which I like, because De'Ron Sharpe has been one of my preferred backup targets for the Lakers over the last couple of years. With Reed, so there's definitely an old school element. And in terms of the physicality, the rebounding, the strength, he would step in and be one of the strongest bigs in the league, which I think is arguably the most appealing thing to his game. He does have the old school post up drop steps and hook shots. And there's a lot that I like with that. I again go to the, like, he's, to me, he's kind of a Goldilocks, where he's a solid rim protector and has like a solid block rate and blocks per 36, blocks per 40. And like, he's got the, I think, the frame to do it, with, you can absorb contact on drives and also just leverage his length well. But to me, it's like, you either have to defensively be an elite rim protector or an incredibly versatile and switchy defender. And to me, he's definitely not the latter. I think there's real mobility concerns of, you have to play drop coverage with him. And he's just like, he's got good, I think, good foot speed for his size and his weight, but I think it's just going to be at a different level against NBA players. So like, he's got to be this drop big, but then he's not quite at the level in terms of rim protector that you would want either. So it's like, I just feel like he's kind of in this in-between zone where he, like, you know, he's not going to be the Jackson Hayes that's switching and versatile and whatever out there on the perimeter, or something like the Morez Johnson, right? Like, he's not switching 1-5, but then he also doesn't have quite the rim protection that you would want, where you could just park him near the basket. So that, like, to me, I have, it's purely the defense. And then I also look at, realistically, like, teams have gone away from post-ups for big men. It's a lot of mismatch hunting, or you have to be an all-star level big to be getting a certain amount of post-ups. And even then, we've seen a bit of a decline there, with the exception of maybe like a Jokic or something like that. Like, think about how many post-ups did Kat actually get in the finals against even smaller guys, you know, because they were often guarding him with a wing. So it's just like, I think in theory, like, that looks great against college guys, but that to me is still more of like a backup trait. So he, to me, is similar to Vassar in terms of, he's probably more of a situational backup and more of like a committee approach. So I'm not opposed to either one of those guys. Best, I think either one of them could be like a high level backup, and I don't see starting level potential for either of them. So some of these other guys, I'd rather take the, like, Swain, I think, could be a starter. Quaintance could be a starter. Carr and Johnson could be starters. Chris Senek, which is the one who has the highest floor to ceiling maybe in the entire draft, could be a starter. I don't really see any scenario realistically in if you're a good team in which Vassar or Reed are starters. So that's where I'm like, the upside to me is just a little bit lower. And compare those guys to like a Jefferson or Zubi Ejiofor. Those guys have far more defensive utility and versatility, where I'm like, those guys could fit what the Lakers need to a different degree. That to me, I just think it's a death knell. If you're a big who has some defensive questions, I think it's really hard to play at the highest levels in 2026.
Yeah. If you had to rank them, those two guys specifically, Reed and Vassar, where would you go?
I have Vassar ahead of him.
Okay.
But it's close. Like, I think it, I guess for what the Lakers need, you could argue that Vassar and the stretch capability kind of checks that box, and then you still get your starting center, and then you have that player, Vassar and Jackson. Reed, then it becomes like, I even wonder if Vassar and Jackson can play together. It'd be a little awkward maybe, but you do have like the lob threat and the stretch big, and we could see some of those like Maxi Jackson minutes, or some of the Drew Timmy with another big type minutes. Yeah. Like, I wonder if you could use Vassar in that way. Reed, it's very much like he needs to be the center, and it's him or Jackson. And so I think for what the Lakers need, I would lean Vassar, but if you want to say Reed, I'm open to that too.
Yeah, I'm in agreement with you. I could see a reason to go with either player, but ultimately, I'm looking elsewhere. I'm looking at other guys. You mentioned him, Zuby Ejiofor. I love this guy. I love that he's awesome. We talk about how important motor is on this team and how you need to have these high motor players, super switchable defensively. I'm not taking him over like a Jaden Quaintance or anybody like that. Like, obviously, you're going for those upside plays. But if he's sitting there for the Lakers, I really love the defensive versatility that you can get from Zuby. Just the energy he's going to play with. I don't know if he'd wind up being a starting level player or not, but I know even coming off the bench, you would get something very real out of him that could make it an impact defensively. So I am very interested in him and the way he could potentially fit with this team. And I also think for the reasons that fans love Jared Vanderbilt, you would also wind up just loving Zuby. But I think he offers a lot more utility to actually be an option that JJ Redick would turn to on a consistent basis.
Also has a great name. Just a fun name to say, right?
For whatever that
counts for. But in all seriousness, I see a lot of Colin Murray Boyles in his game. And that's a guy who was closing playoff games for the Raptors as a small ball five. So I'm not going to go out on a limb and say that Zuby would be closing games for the Lakers in the playoffs. But I think that skill set of being a switch, I mean, to me, of the guys we've mentioned right now, with the exception of maybe, say, Johnson and Quaintance, I think their games will scale to an NBA level defensively at a different level. But you could put Zuby against anybody else, and I would take them, take him defensively. Like the 1-5 switching, I see like a little hint of Draymond in terms of the ability to, and that's also some of the Colin Murray Boyle stuff of just being able to guard bigger guys and like not get bullied and having the length and strength to battle those guys. He played some of the top guys in this draft and held his own, including Boozer. So he, to me, is a guy that, again, him and Jefferson are the two that I think should be there around 25 that are both plug and play, have different skill sets. With Ejiofor, it's far more the defensive side, the motor, the rebounding. And with Jefferson, it's more so the offensive end, the skill, the passing. But I think both guys have utility on the other side of the floor. They both can be net positives on those sides. And like Zuby, I mean, bit of a not really like an above the rim guy, but is a really strong offensive rebounder, does have some heft and strength where he can do little quick post putbacks and hook shots and stuff around guys. So he's not a guy that you're going to run like offense for necessarily, and not even really like the lob threat that you would want from that position. But to me, the defensive instincts and the ability to guard at a minimum any front court position, but even scale down and guard some guards, that to me is such a unique skill set and is unlike anything that the Lakers have really had. I mean, I guess Vando is the closest thing to him, but I just think he's more skilled offensively and stronger than Vando. So I think he's another one of those guys that I would say, like, Jefferson and Ejiofor are probably my two favorite guys who are realistically going to be there at 25. But some of the other guys, if they slip, I would definitely take them over those two.
If you had to pick one of those two, who are you going with?
I have Jefferson ahead because I think the offensive side, even his shot, I think people are like, I could see him being a 35% 3-point shooter. And with all he could do offensively, if he could just get to being a consistent 35-ish% 3-point shooter, like that to me is, he's like the quintessential like eighth man on a championship team, in my opinion. Hitting his ceiling.
You know what came to mind when I think of Jefferson, and this has no bearing whatsoever on the Lakers regular season play at all, but my God, Jefferson and Adu Thiro on the floor in a summer league game would be cinema. Like, he is, Adu's going to be just slashing to the rim, and Jefferson is that guy that's going to pinpoint accurate, find him every single time. We're going to get some insane highlights out of that.
That's actually, though, one of my things that one of the few drawbacks, because the athleticism does scare me. Like, Jefferson's easily the worst athlete on this list. Reed technically, but he at least like makes up for it with his superhuman strength. Like, he's a beast. So it's like, okay, Jefferson doesn't have like that physical trait that he's going to overwhelm you with, where all these guys either have an element of athleticism or length or strength that they can, like Jefferson doesn't have is like be strong, but he's not quite like overwhelming you with his strength. The one drawback for me would be, I think he's more of a four. And if you are looking at the Lakers roster and we say, okay, Luka, LeBron, and Rui are all fours defensively. Jake LaRavia is arguably a four. He's kind of in between being a three and a four. Vando is a five offensively. He does have the defensive utility, but he also kind of plays at the four technically. And you also have a new Thero who's developing. And if he emerges as a rotation guy, maybe he could scale down positionally. But as long as his shot isn't reliable, he's also kind of going to play at the four offensively. So part of me with Jefferson, the one thing is like, are you adding another four into the mix when the Lakers need almost anything outside of a four, right? Like they need a five or they need a three, or they could use a backcourt help depending on the player, but I don't really want to waste this pick on that. I'd rather sign somebody. So yeah, I just look at that and I'm like, you need a 2-3, you need a five. Jefferson doesn't check either one of those boxes. I wonder, like, from a positional need standpoint, does he give you what you need? But I also am like, don't overthink it. And you might move off Vando. You might move off Jake. We'll see what happens with Rui and LeBron if they're back. Like, so there's a lot of moving parts here that could influence what the Lakers do with that.
For me, positional need is unimportant at the beginning of the draft. And it becomes more important the deeper into the draft that you go. So I'm not factoring in, if I am a team that has a number two pick, I'm not factoring in a positional need. I want the guy that I think is going to be a star, period. I don't care what position he plays. I don't care if I've got a log jam at that position. I'm taking the guy with the most belief in him becoming the next level. If it's a true tie, okay, I can use that as tiebreaker. The deeper into the draft you go, the more that positional situation matters, because that's where you're more looking at. Not so much how is this guy going to take our roster to the next level, to more how is this guy going to fit in with the rest of our squad. And so it's certainly something that you have to consider when we're looking at 25, whereas the guys at the top of the draft, you need to take whoever you think's got the best shot of being a star and then use that and don't worry so much about position.
I agree.
All right, we are going to get into the chat for the last little stretch here of our show. Do need to give a quick shout out to our sponsor, though, and that is SeatGeek. We appreciate them, and we'll be back in just 1 minute.
See the light at the end of the tunnel, finally. When we get to the finish line, I'm excited to relax a little bit this summer, get out of the house, go have some fun. Now that my wife and I live in Colorado, we're by Red Rocks, and so I'm excited to go see some concerts this year. I'm actually very excited to go see the Tedeschi Trucks Band. They're coming to play a two-night set, and I think Derek Trucks is one of the best guitarists in the history of the world. So very, very excited to get out, which is why I want to give the sponsor of today's video, SeatGeek, a huge shout out. With over 35 million downloads, SeatGeek is the number one rated ticketing app. And it's really just about how simple the process is. It's so easy to open up the app, look at your map of all the seats, but you can sort by deal, which is my favorite feature, and they rate every single ticket on a scale of 1 to 10 by how good the deal is. So I know if I'm picking from these ones at the top, I'm getting an amazing deal. And as I work further down the list, obviously it might not be as good of a deal, which kind of just simplifies the process for me and helps me know that I'm getting the right ticket for the right price. There are more than 70,000 events listed on SeatGeek, including concerts, sports, festivals, and more. Major League Baseball's in full swing. The NBA and NHL playoffs are here. The NFL schedule's coming out soon. And you can now get World Cup tickets on SeatGeek. And by the way, every ticket is backed by their buyer guarantee. And of course, I have a code for you guys. You can use code COLLECTIVE10 for 10% off your next set of tickets at SeatGeek. That's 10% off any tickets with promo code COLLECTIVE10. Make sure you click the link in the description to download the app and have the code automatically added to your account so you can use it later. Thank you, SeatGeek.
All right, and again, big thank you to SeatGeek. We will take a few questions, a few comments here coming in from the chat, and then we're going to go watch Team USA play a little bit here. Let's go here. LA in three-way with the Bucks and the Heat. Would you take Wiggins or Hero? I would certainly take Wiggins ahead of Hero if I'm the
I would take Wiggins and not take Hero.
Yes. Hero.
As long as you have Austin, I don't think Hero makes any sense, and I'd rather have Austin compared to Hero. So.
If Giannis goes to Miami, would you do Connect and two firsts for Kelaware and Miles Turner? I've heard people say one or the other, but not both together.
That's interesting.
That's a lot of that your cap. Your first of all, you'd have to operate as a below the cap team to do that because you'd have to absorb. You're effectively absorbing Miles Turner's because Kel O'Ware's salary is going to be very close to Dalton Kincaid's. You're absorbing all of Turner's salary. That's what is it, $27 million off the top of my head, something like that.
Yeah,
He's $26.5 million.
So I would say no. And I would give up a first because I think if we deconstruct this trade to a degree here, right? Like it's Kinect depends on the team, how they value him. I think most people like, I think at best he's a neutral asset. For some people, he might be like a slight negative, but I think based on the contract situation, he's functionally an expiring contract at $4.5 million. Like that's not this massive albatross on your cap sheet. So Kinect could be a low risk flyer for some team taking him on. But again, let's just say he's between like neutral to slightly negative value. I would give up a first for Ware. Mm-hmm. I would not give up two firsts for Ware. I think that is an overpay. And then I would not give up a first for Turner. I would actually want something in return for Turner. So
agreed.
I guess if you're I would do a first and like a swap. I would do a first and a second. But I think two firsts to me is too aggressive. I'm also a bit lower on Turner and his fit. I think that the rebounding and the lack of being a lob threat, like Luka, I don't know how many more signals Luka has to put out other than going on Instagram Live and just saying it to the camera. Like Luka wants a lob threat. So Miles Turner is not a lob threat. That's not part of his game. I think Luka could unlock it more than maybe any other player that Miles Turner's played with. It'd like make him look like a pseudo lob threat, but that's not really a strength of Miles Turner's game. So I you know, now Ware, okay, Ware is a different story. And maybe this ends up being like, Ware is your starter, Turner is your bench guy, but now you're paying $28 million for a backup five, which doesn't really make sense to me. So this, I would actually want an asset back or to have the price lowered. But if you said like Dalton and a first for Ware and Turner, and you're just like, you're taking on Turner to help Milwaukee, I'd be open to that, but I'm not giving up two firsts.
Yeah, agreed. And we're in lockstep on our thoughts on Turner. I'm just not that high on it. I liked him when the Lakers had Anthony Davis as a potential guy that you could use with AD, but not in the current.
I think people overlook also like specifically against the Knicks and the Thunder. I don't think he played that well in either one of those series. Those are two of the three best teams in the league. Two of the three teams you might have to go through to win a championship. So like he was great in the first couple rounds. His play slipped in the conference finals and finals against those two particular opponents. And I just think his metrics fell off a cliff last year. He's in his early 30s. There's just some red flags there for me.
And 3 years on his deal as well. M. Shea said, thoughts on Joe or Wiggins into our cap space. What do you think it would take? Would you trade our first this year for Misi or Gafford? So I guess first, you know, Isaiah Joe, Aaron Wiggins into cap space. Would you do that to help the Thunder out with their situation? If they just said, just take them, just give us a top 55 protected second rounder or whatever, just take the guy. Would you be open to doing something like that?
I'd take either one of them.
I would
prefer Joe because I view Joe as a Kennard upgrade. Because I think he's better defensively than Kennard. He also has more of the just let it fly. Like he'll come in and take five shots in 3 minutes. And yeah. I think the Lakers need a little bit more of that. So like Isaiah Joe is, if he's open at all, he's shooting it. He's not overthinking it. If he's open even a sliver, he's shooting it. And sometimes even when he's not open, he's shooting it. I think the Lakers, like Isaiah Joe in a wild card bench scoring role, which we've seen him do for OKC, but for most teams, he would have a more prominent role. I think he could be excellent in that. And to me, I would rather have him than Luke Kennard. Wiggins is a trickier one because Wiggins is a guy that to me is like, I like the theory of Wiggins. And I have seen some performances from him that have been impressive. But I'm also like, I don't really know where he fits. Like, I don't know what his thing is. Like, he's a little bit of like a jack of all trades. And I don't know, maybe it's the defense, but even then, I don't know if he's quite up to what you want. Like I don't know what his thing is that like gets him into the top eight locked in a rotation. I know there was a quote from Tim McMahon saying that someone on the Lakers coaching staff said that Aaron Wiggins would be playing 25 minutes a night yeah. and be like the seventh or eighth man on the Lakers. That might have been true with last year's roster, but I think the version that the Lakers want to build, I don't know where he fits into that. So I'm a little concerned on that one. With Misi and Gafford, Misi, I would take Misi over Vassar or Reed.
Yeah,
I guess it depends who's there at 25. If it's any of my top five or six guys, I'd rather just take them. Mm-hmm. If it's one of the lower guys, I would flip that for Misi. And for Gafford, I would flip for Gafford.
There were reports that at the trade deadline, it was the Pelicans were wanting a first for Eve Misi, at least. Like he wasn't even a starter for the Pels. You know, the majority of games, I think he started like 16 games over the course of the season. Like he's a really good rebounder, a good offensive board guy. Is he going to be an NBA starter? I still don't know. I think you're right. If my dream targets are off the board, maybe I do something like that. Gafford, we already know, fits with Luka, right? Gafford, the Mavs went and got Gafford because he fits with Luka. I don't know if the Mavs will trade with the Lakers. I don't know if they're allowed to, if their fan base will lose their minds or what would happen if they traded with the Lakers. It is a different decision-making group there now. But still, Gafford is a guy I'd certainly have interest in. I don't know if Gafford in a vacuum is quite, he's like right on the cusp of being an NBA level starter. I think with Luka, you can make the argument that he is a starter for the Lakers if he's tethered to Luka Doncic. So I think I agree. I'd have more interest in Gafford than Misi, but Misi's not bad either. And I think you're right. If your main targets are off the board, I'd be open to flipping the pick to get Eve Misi.
The one thing I would note too with Misi is that, remember, like they invested so much in the Derek Queen trade. And a lot of times on younger teams, when you're still having multiple guys on rookie scale contracts, like pedigree and where you took a guy is going to heavily factor into whether a guy's a starter or how much minutes a guy is playing. So true. I don't think it's a great sign that Misi has not been able to carve out a more consistent role. And ideally you would want him as a proving that he's a full-time starter, which he has not proven. But I think he had a better rookie year than sophomore year. Then they drafted Derek Queen. Zion was healthier. So there's like a limitation there with those three guys together that I understand like why Misi would potentially be the odd man out through that lens. And then with Gafford, yeah, I'm with you that he's a fringe guy in terms of like he's not an every night starter. I also think like secretly or quietly rather, during that 2024 run, like they looked better, in my opinion, with Derek Lively on the floor. Gafford wasn't as playable in the conference finals, mm-hmm. finals, but yeah. So but again, for this round, if the guys aren't there that you want and you do your due diligence and it's like you're not getting Kessler, you're not getting Durin, you're not getting Hartenstein, you're not getting some of these other guys, it's like, would I rather have Gafford or gamble on Robert Williams being healthy for 50 games? Like I would take 80 games of Robert Williams over 80 games of Daniel Gafford. You're just not getting 80 games from either of them. And I'd rather take Gafford for like 70 versus Robert Williams for 45.
But you mentioned him. What if it was Lively?
Oh, I would do two first round picks for Lively. I would do this year
seven
and
games
a future
last
first.
Year and 36 games the season before.
I think he checks. I mean, we've seen the proof of concept with Luka. He's young enough. The health stuff is concerning, but I would be very aggressive with the Derek Lively trade.
I would too. I've got concerns about the injury status, but I don't think that the Mavs want to move on from him or anything. And if I'm the Mavs, similar to the way I would approach the Kyrie situation, I'd get him on the floor before I'd look to trade him so that teams would be willing to give a little bit more for a guy that at least have seen play recently. All right, we're going to do, let's do one more here. Kevin said, I don't mind losing Rui, even if he is elite at shooting, because he doesn't shoot enough volume. It's like having a superpower and not using it. I mean, that's kind of the comment on Kennard, right? Who can be a little bit hesitant to shoot the shot, you know, but what it really makes me think of, Jovan, is Marc Gasol from back in 2021, who statistically was a really good 3-point shooter, but was, I think, overly hesitant to shoot to the point where you didn't really get the same effect of having a stretch big because teams knew he was going to shoot such a low volume. They didn't go out to cover him quite as much. Rui and Kennard, I don't think are at quite that point. They are still guys that you have to defend on the perimeter that teams care about, that they're out there. But I do get that the limited volume does also limit the positive impact that you can get from Rui Hachimura, to the point where you can make an argument that if you find somebody who's good at the stuff Rui is not, even if they're just a league average three-point shooter or a little bit better, the Lakers as a whole could take a step forward.
Yeah, I think my issue with Rui, ultimately, the more I think through just the Lakers roster and what they should do and what they can do, as Trevor...
go USA! Let's go. Sorry, I'm a little distracted.
No, go for it. My point is, like, longer term, if we think about... I guess, like, I would flip this and ask you this question. The Lakers are in the NBA Finals or the Conference Finals, and they're playing... You know, the Knicks are in year two and they're even stronger chemistry wise and continuity wise, and they have all the confidence of a defending champ, or they're playing San Antonio or OKC in the conference finals. And let's even say it's like a year from now. So just the kind of like, so LeBron's not in the picture. LeBron is retired. LeBron plays okay. One more year as a Laker, and it's like next year. Do you think Rui can be out there with Luka in like the closing moments, the final 6-7 minutes, I guess, because I think the answer is no. I don't think you have the defensive utility there. Like, I think he's a four. I think Luka's a four defensively as well. And that's where I just run into, there's a ceiling to, like, I think Rui on a Luka team is more of a 25 to 28 minute a night. Could be a high level bench guy, but I don't know if I want to pay that guy close to $20 million when, like, I don't have confidence in him being a closer. Especially if you have Austin and Luka there, now you need like two all defense guys out there at the other two spots. And also like this unicorn guy who can like defend down and guard guards, but also defend up and guard forwards, and like be just like, you need Jaden McDaniels basically out there. And it's like, are you adding Jaden McDaniels here? Like, I don't think so. So I just think longer term, if you're committing to Luka and Austin, which I think the Lakers are, the other three closing spots have to be at a certain level defensively. And I don't think Rui's quite there.
I trust him certainly on the offensive end. I trust Rui in high pressure situations. Yeah, to knock down those
shots. I trust him offensively as well too. That's not my question here.
It's the defensive side that I agree.
Can he make those? When San Antonio gets you in the blender, can he make those rotations? When you got to be cross-matching and switched on to Shea or switched on to AJ Mitchell, can he hang there? But when you got to be switched on to Brunson and like, or you got to make that read against OG Anunoby or Mikal Bridges on a closeout on the weak side, like, I think the answer is no.
I think the answer is no, and it's no for two reasons when we're talking about Rui defensively. It's number one, it's physically, is he high motor? Is he fast enough? Is he quick enough to get out there? But before you even get to that, is he going to consistently make the right read? And I think the answer is no on both of those things. And that's where I think you've got a problem with Rui. As much as I love Rui and his ability to shoot the ball and what he's done there, absolutely phenomenal. So I do think that's something. Now, my only counter would be, how do you account for the beginning of last year when LeBron was out, Rui started at the four, and that was with Ayton in there, and yet the Lakers defensively were pretty good, and that unit actually had a really strong, I don't remember off the top of my head what it was, but their overall net rating was very, very positive with Austin, Luka, Rui, DA out there on the floor. Was that small sample size, or was there anything that we could take from that moving forward and think, maybe there's something that does work with that group?
I think it can work in the regular season. I would also say that I think if you look at the general, I mean, there's an argument for that some make that, you know, by Christmas time, teams are who they are, and you can look at the standings, take a snapshot of it, and that's generally what the standings are going to be, or like the league hierarchy. I think we've seen that change in recent years. I think it's more so like that January to April stretch tends to be very revealing in terms of just that. Like, I think about the Pacers caught fire starting in early January, and you see them make the finals, and like they were this sleeping giant in the East. I would say that, like, if you look at the schedule, it was not the like you go back to the Lakers' seven game win streak at the beginning of the schedule. It was like they beat Utah twice, they beat the Mavs, the Clippers, when the Clippers were in their 6-24 start or whatever it was. Like, they beat some bad teams. And so, you know, they beat Minnesota a couple times. There was a couple nice wins in there, but I would argue that like most of their wins were not against good teams. I also think there's like some wonkiness at the start of the season as
teams are kind of figuring themselves out. Teams aren't fully formed yet. So look, I mean, the reason I mentioned those three teams is because I think it can work in the regular season. I think you could have Ruiz, your starting four, be a 50 plus win team with him as your starting four. I think you can maybe even win a round. I think when you get to OKC, San Antonio, New York, that standard of team, and we'll see what happens with Boston. Do they go get Giannis? And like, what does that do for them? Like, when you get to the top four or five teams in the league, that's where I have the concerns. And that's where I think every position matters, every dollar matters. And I just think if you are committing to Luka and Austin the way that the Lakers are, like, I was not surprised by that ESPN report that Rui seems to be the odd guy out potentially, especially if you're bringing back LeBron. Like, at that point, I just don't think he really fits in because he's not a three. The Lakers have tried to make him a three. He's not a three. He's a four. And I think he needs to be in a situation where he's a four and he's your worst front court defender. And as long as the Lakers have the current iteration of the group, neither one of those things is necessarily even going to be true. So I'm like, I just think that like they are putting him in a position where they need him to be a stopper and he's just not that.
Well, and like somebody in the chat said, well, the same thing is true for Austin in terms of making the read off ball or having the speed in order to go get out there and cover his man. We're talking about a build where you are building around Luka and Austin. Yeah, if Austin's not on the team and LeBron's not on the team, then Rui becomes much more tolerable with his defensive lapses. It's still difficult, but the issue is, can you add that to Luka and Austin? That's what we're building it off of. The Lakers have those two as their foundation. If that suddenly changes, if something in that shifts, then of course everything else in terms of the evaluation of Rui and everybody else on the roster would also shift in that context.
Yeah, now I would also argue, like, you know, we've litigated this conversation for both players to some degree for forever, but I'll just say this: money talks, the market talks, and Austin's about to get probably a 40 plus AAV contract coming up here in the next couple of weeks. Rui's probably going to be making half of that at most. Like, I would be surprised if Rui is making over $20 million. I think he's probably going to be in the high teens. So for, you know, we could sit here and debate how they construct the roster. We could debate how they construct defensive line. Like, the money is going to talk and Austin is going to get at least double the amount of Rui. So whether you agree with it or not, like, that is how the Lakers view the situation. That is how NBA teams with cap space and actual exceptions view the situation. So it's like, you know, I just think it's just different. Like, you know, Austin's a much better player. And I, you know, I think the market will prove that.
All right. Let's wrap up there. This is quick and easy here. This one, would you do sign and trade for Rui plus three first round picks?
Yes.
For Trey Murphy. Yes.
Yes.
That's easy for me.
Put the Rui part to the side. I would do three first round picks for Trey Murphy. I think that's what it's going to cost.
Yep. I love his contract too. It's a great deal. Great deal. All right, everybody. We're going to wrap things up there. Go watch Team USA. See how that's going. But we appreciate all of you for joining the show. If you haven't done so yet, please make sure you hit the subscribe button. I am saving the super chats we didn't get to. I'll throw something together here over the weekend and get through all of those. Make sure we address them. But again, appreciate all of you who have joined us here on the Lakers Collective. Again, don't forget to hit that subscribe button, like this show as well, and follow us over on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts. We need some more ratings and reviews over there. So if you guys wouldn't mind, take 15 seconds real quick, one sentence review of the show. We'd appreciate that as well. Jovan, it's a lot of fun. We're going to link back up next week. By next week, who knows what the NBA world that we're going to be stepping into is going to look like.
Yeah, no, I'm excited here for the next few days and, all that unfolds. Let the off season begin.
Let's go. All right, everybody. See ya and stay safe.